Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is the 26th of September.
Yep.
No, 27th.
27th.
But it's going out on the 28th. Yeah. So a lot of confusing things happening here. And it is episode 79. We've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We're going to be talking to Gideon Rosner, IPA Communications Director. He is the author of a new parliamentary research brief we put out this week calling for, sort of busting the myths about ABC privatisation. Obviously, that's a huge issue in the news this week, so we'll talk to him about that. And we are also going to be talking to Beau Sargent, friend of the show. He was on the show when he was doing work experience with us, and he's going to pop back in to tell us about returning to civilian life.
Yeah. Year 11 student.
Year 11 student, and what he thought of a recent event that we saw him at. Anything else?
We talked about how one of his friends is a massive Morgan Begg fan.
Oh, yeah, massive Morgan Begg fan. Aren't we all, though?
Well,
aren't we all?
Yeah, no, I am.
I'm a huge Morgan Begg fan. Nina, press the button first. Are you a big fan of Morgan Begg?
Yeah, if I have to say so.
Wow. Okay.
Shots of fire.
I love you, Mark. I love you.
Our first IPA rivalry.
Yeah.
It's been long coming. Cool. So let's get into it. So I think we should start off with the ABC stuff. That's the thing that's been dominating the headlines.
Well, they're our ABC, James.
They are our ABC, and therefore we should care. So Michelle Guthrie, the managing director of the ABC, she was fired on Monday. Or it's definitely been asked to leave. Sorry, she's gone. And ABC, they're looking for a new person to run. The person that's been floated forward has been Justin Milne. Now, that has been met with a whole lot of controversy. Especially the thing that's come out about it has been that he asked Michelle Guthrie to insist that senior journalist Emma Alberici be fired because Turnbull didn't like her. Yep. The quote being, "The government hate her. We need to save the ABC, not Emma. There's no guarantee they," meaning the coalition, "will lose the next election." So he's like bringing up funding things.
There's not much standing by your colleague in that, is there?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, the government doesn't like us, therefore fire the journalist. Yep. A bit weird, and does immediately kick me into, well, then the ABC should be privatised because you can't get a good government/ABC relationship going if that's the case. So just before we hopped into the studio again, we are recording on a Thursday, so there's a bunch of things that might have happened since we've recorded this, but Justin Milne has just been asked to step aside, tweeted out Shari Markson, so a whole lot of things are going to go on there. Yeah, absolute mess. Seems to be, would be my takeout.
Yeah, well, that's right. So he's apparently just been asked to leave on the back of huge pressure from ABC staff. I'm so disappointed I missed the meeting with dozens and dozens of self-righteous ABC journos. That's a meeting that would have been just fantastic.
Well, just tune in on ABC at any given time and you'll sort of get a feel for what's going on there.
That's right. So, yeah, obviously a bit of a mess at the moment. This, and look, as Gideon says in our interview, you know, this is just a distraction. The ABC should be privatised regardless of what's going on at the top. You know, every company has leadership battles, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, absolutely. So stick around in the show. We're going to be talking to Gideon a bit more in depth about the central issues there. So, Pete, shall we move on to another topic?
Let's move on to another topic. A topic that I call...
We're agreed. Motion carried, motion passed.
We are in consensus.
Yeah, if only the ABC was run as smoothly as this podcast, there'd be nothing.
You know, I guess there's a lesson for everyone in that. I want to talk about extreme poverty. Extreme poverty has dropped again, down 10% in 20. This is the World Bank, down 10% in 2015, which is their latest calculations. So that's down from 11% in 2013. So that's a drop from 11% to 10% in 2 years. Now that progress is good, but it's slow. It used to be going at a quicker rate, so it is a little bit slower than it's been going. The last 25 years, more than a billion people have lifted themselves out of extreme poverty. And the global poverty rate is now lower than it's ever been in human history, which is obviously a wonderful thing. We talk about a lot of negative stuff, what everyone does these days, but that's fantastic news. Now, I just need to check the actual figures here. 68 million people less are living on less than $1.90 a day, which is the definition of extreme poverty from the World Bank. So that number's down to 736 million. Between 1990 and 2015, the rate dropped from 36% of the world's population to 10%. And the World Bank's preliminary forecast for 2018, so we're talking about 2015 here, is 8.6%. So that's great.
It is. And this leads me to, like, that should be the biggest story in the world.
Well, yeah.
And instead we've got Trump elicited 2 seconds of laughter at the UN.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's this amazing statistic and we can talk about, like, oh, it's slowing and what are the reasons for that. But no, Trump getting laughed at for 2 seconds. Mm. That's the international news.
Yeah, no, it's it is great news, and it's largely off the back of freer markets in various parts of the world. China slowed down a bit, which I think accounts for the slow. Interestingly, what we should realise about this is not that it's just a what's the word? Lay down misere that the rest of the world will.
Okay, college boy.
Yeah, I'm pretty cultured. We'll just come out of poverty. You know, the countries that are stuck in poverty and aren't moving at all, you know, around sub-Saharan Africa, aren't really moving at all, basically. So, they're the countries that most need the rule of law, most need property rights, most need free markets. And they too will enjoy the fruits that everyone else does.
Absolutely. We should then move on to the Trump speech, because it still is news, even though the World Bank statistics should be bigger news than that, but we should talk about it. So, I mean, this one got a lot of international play, so our listeners probably know what's going on, but just in case, so Trump made a speech to the General Assembly, and do you want to take it from here?
Because
we've got this marked down as yours, and I just realised, I've gone straight into the introduction.
That's all right. No, you did a great job.
Thank you.
So the speech was on a lot of stuff, you know, a fair bit on sovereignty, the US not placing power in the hands of unelected international bodies, which for some reason is quite controversial. I would have thought that's pretty straightforward. You know, North Korea, Venezuela, stuff like that, a bit of stuff about trade. Obviously, he got a laugh at one point. The big story is that, you know, these people that listen to dictators so respectfully laughed at Trump, an elected leader of a democratic nation. Anyway,
apparently. Can I get into the quote, though? So Trump says, has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country, talking about his own administration. Yeah. I'm gobsmacked he qualified that with almost. Like, that must have killed him. That, to me, was the biggest, like that's why I would have laughed. I'm like, how did he not... how did he use almost in that?
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought he said, we're the best administration ever. It was only when I was preparing for the show that I said, oh, he said almost.
Yeah, that was that should have been my takeout. But anyway, sorry.
That's all right. No, he said, you know, United States is stronger, safer, and a richer country than it was when I assumed office, which is, you know, which is true. Yeah, what else did he say? You know, and there...
Well, he also went really hard. He threw a lot of elbows at Iran, which was pretty... interesting. So again, we talk about like how clickbait journalism is becoming. It's like 2 seconds of laughter, and I know I'm talking about it a lot, but like there's so much in that speech which is quite incredible. Like, I mean, really strong words on Iran, a pretty powerful country.
Yep.
But it's the 2 seconds of laughter.
That's right. Anyway, that's all I got for that, James.
That's all you got. All right. So I'll move on to another story. So this one, bring it back home to Australia. So the Saturday paper gives out this prize called the Horn Prize. It is an essay writing competition, and I think you get published in the Saturday paper as part of a winner. It's pretty prestigious in the writing community. So it came out this week that the Saturday paper is going to change its rules. It was like carte blanche. You can write about whatever you want. And this year was going to be a rule. People who aren't Indigenous can't write about Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander communities. And there's also, like, if you're not gay, you can't write about gay people's experiences. If you're not a woman, you can't write about women's experiences. But going back to the Aboriginal one, Tim Winton would be in huge trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean,
he would have read that and go, well, I'm out.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you know. I don't think he's relying on the Horn Prize for any income, but he would have. That would have hurt him.
Well, you know, a lot of fiction writers would have been in trouble having to write about only their own experience.
Yeah. And so...
like Shakespeare, obviously.
Yeah. Well, he was never a crown prince in Denmark. And his uncle... No, I'm going to get myself in trouble there. Never bite off more than you can chew. Then a lot of stuff happened. So Anna Funda, who was on the board of judges, Australian writer, she wrote Stasiland. A lot of high school listeners of our show might be studying that already. And cool. David Marr as well. So they said, you know what, if that's the rule, then we're out, which is a very good stand. And hats off to them for standing up for that. And so the Saturday paper has reversed its ban. So this is like an issue that we've been talking about for a while. And I know Lionel Shriver seems to be always pop up in these stories. But it's very cool to see people from the left say, you know what, actually, cultural appropriation, we're not going to bite into that.
That's right. I'm quite optimistic about cultural appropriation because of stuff like this. And there's growing numbers of people that you know, are part of this now, like Jermaine Greer, obviously got kicked out of the Brisbane Writers Festival. Marshall Langdon, also another person on this panel that pulled out and they changed the rules. So, yeah, it's just part of the growing file of lefties arcing up about cultural appropriation, which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely, and more of it. So we've got a few more things, a bit of housekeeping. So Great Books of Literature podcast, another podcast that the IPA does this week.
Could I make a point about that?
You may.
So this is all with the Greek they did, right? A fresh piece of graffiti next to my apartment in Brunswick, Zorba the Greek.
Wow.
That's impact.
That's impact. I can't think of any other reason.
And if Andrew Kajon could clean that off, That'd be great.
Cool. So, Great Books of Literature podcast. Saw with the Greek, as Peter alluded to, was this week's episode. So make sure you're going out and downloading that. You can hear Andrew Bolt and John Roskam just talk about the book, the themes, the life of Nikos Kazantzakis, which was quite incredible. A lot of people are coming in. The Great Books of Literature podcast was number one in the arts category on iTunes after one episode. So a lot of people getting involved in that podcast, really enjoying the discussions. You've got... Zorba the Greek, and then if you are new to the program, there's also Wuthering Heights, Bleak House, and The Leopard in the back catalogue. So if you liked any of those books, want to hear Andrew and John talk about that, then go download it from iTunes and Podbean and wherever. Chris Berg, friend of the show, adjunct fellow here at the IPA, he has a new book out, The Classical Liberal Case for Privacy in a World of Surveillance and Technological Change. You can buy that from springer.com.
Loves a book, that guy.
Loves a book. How many books has that guy written?
4,000. Writing fun.
Yeah. if you do care about online privacy, if you do care about like surveillance state, all these issues that are coming out at the moment, a lot of stuff about Google. Make sure you're buying that book. It is a really cracking read. Cool. So that's it for stuff for the show this week. We'll now go to our interviews with Gideon and Bo. Before we do this podcast, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. Make sure you're telling your friends and family about it. We're available on our iTunes, Podbean, Spotify. You can download it through Pocket Casts on Android. You can do a whole bunch of things. Just make sure you're getting the show out. And if you are listening on iTunes, please leave us a 5-star review.
Do we still have people in Sweden listening on Spotify?
Oh, do they ever? Our most hardcore fans, I reckon.
G'day to our Swedish listeners.
And we do have a Swedish story coming up later in the show, I think. Oh. We do. So giving them the content that they so richly deserve.
Stay tuned.
Let me read your ad. So if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us that 5-star review. And you can also leave a comment for the show, maybe a tip or maybe a story that you saw. Nina, pressing the buttons for us, as always, if people want to become a member of the IPA, maybe they already are a member and they want to donate, how can they do that?
Just visit the website, ipa.org.au, and click on that join button or the donation button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. Let's go to those interviews now. Okay, we now welcome back to the show the IPA Director of Communications, Gideon Rosner. Welcome back.
G'day, great to be here. I think this is my second time in a fortnight. So.
Yeah, it hasn't been too long, but we do have a lot to talk about now.
Keep that quiet, people will arc up. And is this a new title for Gideon as well?
Yeah, I think so. Is it since your podcast?
Yeah, very recent.
So it's a podcast bump has got you the new title.
I think so. I think they put me over the line.
Yeah, I think so.
The new commissar of comms.
The boys upstairs were very impressed with the podcast interview, so that got me where I am.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so let's talk about it, because big week for you. We've released the parliamentary research brief, The 5 Myths About State Ownership of the ABC. Now, this is something I know you've been working on for a fair bit, and with the ABC heavily in the news this week, we put it out. So do you want to talk about sort of the backstory as to how we got to this PIB?
Yeah, so we've been looking into it for a little while, and I wrote it a little while ago, and we've, for various reasons, it's been in the works, and we were planning on putting it out this week, as a matter of fact, and we've been fortunate in a sense that the ABC has been in the news at the moment because of the business with Michelle Guthrie. And now today, this is being recorded on a Wednesday, and we've had the Twitter basically exploding over these revelations about Justin Mill and everything else. So I've been running around all day trying to get media releases and get this out and everything else to try to strike while the iron's hot and make the point that basically, these issues with the ABC about political interference are really, we can talk about management, we can talk about what Justin Milne did and what he emailed and what he shouldn't have emailed, but fundamentally the root of this matter is the fact that we have a $1.1 billion a year state-funded broadcaster. There is absolutely no reason in the year 2018 for us to have publicly funded media, and there's no place for a state broadcaster anywhere, whether it be in Australia or North Korea. So it's been a big day, and it's good to be here in the podcast studio, taking a load off and chatting to you guys about where it's at.
I can imagine that dynamic private sector media sector in North Korea is just about to take off if there wasn't a state-run broadcaster.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, the argument being made by all my mates on Twitter is, oh, we need a state broadcaster because it's fundamental to democracy. Bill Shorten's just said the healthy democracy requires a state broadcaster. Well, again, ask the poor punters in Pyongyang how that's going for them. So anyway, so we've put out this PRB, and the PRB is And for the listeners who don't know, the Parliamentary Research Brief Project is a product that we put out, sent to members of Parliament, and it's a 2 pages maximum, short, sharp, you know, basically designed for politicians who have mail coming in from all sorts of sources and really only have time to read a 1-pager. So we try to distill our arguments into a succinct way. So this...
And they're all available on our website. So if you do correct, want to go read this website, if you want to go read this parliamentary research brief, ipa.org.au.
Correct. So they're publicly available, but this one in particular aims to turn on their head the myths that are thrown around every time the great evil of ABC privatisation is mentioned. So the first one is that every time you talk about privatising the ABC, then the first thing to come out of the mouths of people at the ABC and in the Labor Party and even some within the coalition will say, well, this is an attack on the ABC. You hate the ABC. You want to shut it down. No, privatisation is not an attack on an organisation. All privatisation is, in an economic sense, is the transfer of something from state ownership to private sector ownership. It's like saying, you know, Paul Keating privatised Qantas in 1992. It's not because he wanted to shut down Qantas. It's not because he hated aviation. It was simply a matter of the fact that in 1992, it made absolutely no economic sense for the Australian government to be in the business of running an airline. And since they privatised Qantas in 1992, it has gone from strength to absolute strength. It flies to more destinations. Well, correct. It's doubled the size of its fleet. It's tripled the number of destinations it flies to. Its revenue has gone from $7.2 billion to $16 billion. And its share price, having gone from $1.90 at the time it floated, is now at $6.16 at the last time I looked. So privatisation actually benefits organisations, not the other way around. So the ABC would probably actually be run better if it was transferred to the private sector. But
I think ultimately they'll come to thank us in the future. Once they are privatised, they will thank us for that.
I'm sure the ABC staff today that are lining up in Ultimo to demonstrate against Justin Milner are all saying, well, when are we going to be privatised and solved? I think that's the first thing on their mind. But for one thing, I don't agree with the ABC a lot of the time. I don't like a lot of its editorial positions it takes on things. But I don't hate the ABC. Some of its content is actually quite good. You know, Four Corners, for the most part, is quite decent investigative journalism.
Again, Tonightly. I know you're a big fan.
Oh, Tonight. I actually got along well with Tom Ballard when I appeared on his show. Actually, I was worried that he really, I went on to be the butt of the joke, but, you know, he was actually not such a bad bloke in the end. So maybe the new managing director will bring him back. Anyway, so the number two myth that's commonly floated about the ABC is that a state-funded broadcaster means that we have an independent broadcaster that's free of the whims of the evil media barons like Rupert Murdoch and those evil advertisers and so on. The ABC is the least independent media outlet in the country because it's owned by the government. There is nothing independent about it. And a lot of the time, the independence is shorthand for independence in terms of impartiality. And we know that the ABC isn't impartial either. It's not like it's free of bias. Everybody knows the ABC is biased. A study was done in 2013, which is the most recently available study of this nature we have, showing that while at that election the Australian people voted 45% primary votes for the coalition in the lower house, ABC journalists voted, when they were polled, 14.7%. The Australian people voted 8.7% for the Australian Greens. Among ABC journalists, that figure was 41.2%.
Are you saying ABC journalists are left-wing?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, they would appear to be. And look, that's not a problem in itself. Every media organisation is biased.
Yeah, that's the point. Like, the problem, like, there's no problem with a journalist having bias. It's just like when the government starts paying salaries, I guess, then things get a bit iffy.
Well, the difference is, you know, even my favourite mastheads, like, for example, The Australian, you know, has its own worldview on things and its own... Every newspaper since the dawn of time has taken editorial positions. The difference is nobody forces you to buy a copy of The Oz, but all of us are forced to effectively subscribe to the ABC through our tax dollars. So it's unfair to be asking Australians to all pay for a media outlet that increasingly is reflective of a very narrow range of viewpoints.
Yeah, and like one of the stories that got a whole lot of controversy was like the idea that Turnbull called up the ABC to get Emma Alberici fired. And a lot of people standing up saying, you know, Turnbull has no right to call for someone to be fired like that. And you, the immediate point being, like, do you know a way in which that would never happen again?
Yeah,
privatization. You'd have nothing to do.
Correct. Well, strictly speaking, the ABC has a charter and it's supposed to be independent, and it's not directly managed by the minister of the day, but the fact of the matter is that the emails from Justin Milne that have been flying around today indicate that his concern was, well, we better do what the PM wants, otherwise our funding will be cut, and there's no guarantee that they're going to lose the next election, so we better get rid of her. Well, that, again, when the government controls the purse strings and is in charge of you know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. So a really great way to safeguard the independence of the ABC would be to remove government from the equation and transfer it to a whole lot of salt of the earth mum and dad shareholders like we have with Telstra and Qantas and all sorts of other things. The best way to make sure it really is our ABC is if we could all own a piece of it.
Give it back.
That's
to the
my dream, owning ABC shares.
Fantastic. We'll move on to the third myth of the parliamentary research brief. State ownership of the ABC is essential to diversity and quality.
Yeah, well, again, that may have been true back in the day when we had an analog television spectrum, and you know, the only other acts in town were Channel 9, Channel 10, Channel 7, and on occasion SBS. But in this day and age, we don't need a government broadcaster to give us different content. You can dial up any content you want, whether it be on Netflix or whether it be on, you know, YouTube. There are a range of news sources. There are blogs. We have the most diverse media landscape we ever have. There's no need for us to pay through our taxes for an additional source of media content. So that's myth number three. Myth number four. And this is one of my favourites, that state ownership of the ABC ensures Australian content is produced. Now, that is true to some extent. The ABC does spend a certain amount of its budget on Australian content and things like Tonightly by Tom Ballard, but a lot of it isn't. You know, when I watch ABC comedy, you know, it used to be ABC 2 late at night, they rerun The Office. Yeah.
Parks and Rec. With that.
There's nothing wrong with that, but as far as I'm aware, there's no need for the taxpayer to fund me watching The Office late at night. I mean, those kind of shows, A, they're not Australian content, but they're pretty commercially successful by themselves. And the other point to make is if you must insist on subsidising Australian TV content and media content, and I, you know, being the free-wheeling libertarian sort of bloke that I am, don't think that's a particularly good idea. But if you do want to subsidise Australian artists and so on and everything else, there are other ways to do it, whether it be direct subsidies through organisations like Screen Australia, or the fact that commercial networks are actually required by law, again, rightly or wrongly, to have at least 55% of their content on primary channels being Australian made. As it is right now, all the commercial networks actually are well in excess of those local content requirements. Channel 10 has 68-odd% of its content being created in Australia.
Neighbours.
For Channel 7, it's 73.41%, Home and Away. Channel 9,
I watched that last
Millionaire
night.
Hot Seat, 47%. You watch Home and Away?
Last night I watched it, yeah.
Yeah?
For the first time in about 25 years.
I used to watch Neighbours when I was a kid.
Okay.
Back in the days when there were the Kennedys first arrived and so on, but I think I've lost touch since then.
This is what all the, you know, the people sitting in the inner cities of Melbourne and Sydney who are talking about support for Australian art. Yeah. They mean Neighbours.
Well, it's a fine product and a fine export product.
Neighbours won a Logie for best drama like a few years ago.
Yeah, well,
there you go.
Biggest indictment on Australian entertainment I've ever heard.
That proves the whole point, though. I mean, Neighbours has been successful for how long? 25 odd years?
Yeah, but like, imagine if like Bold and the Beautiful won an Emmy for Best Drama. You'd be like, can America make
it has,
good?
Hasn't it?
It's more quality.
I'm sure it has.
Sorry?
I'm sure it has. There are daytime Emmys and things like that.
Yeah, but like an actual like Emmy up against Breaking Bad and stuff like that. Like, I'm just saying, like, if Neighbours is the best TV show we're making, things are not looking too good.
No, Neighbours is a fine, fine product, and you know, it's a successful export and it's been a hit for a long time. And most importantly of all, has not required a cent of taxpayer funding to be produced.
Well, I can praise that.
A debunker of myth number four, and that brings us to myth number five, which is actually the one that resonates the most with people who would otherwise, you know, more conservative people who would otherwise be quick to support the privatisation of the ABC, which is this idea that the ABC is necessary for people regionally. Because back in the day, you can understand that being a more valid argument, because if you live in a remote area, it didn't make commercial sense for commercial networks to broadcast to, you know, the bush and the outback and so on. So the ABC filled that void. But these days, people in the country have exactly the same media access that you and I do living in inner city Melbourne, because through the internet they can dial up, again, whatever they want. The biggest difference you could make to people in the bush accessing entertainment is to enable them to get good internet access. And again, whether that's through, you know, state-funded NBN,
yeah, it's
or...
it's not through the NBN.
It's not through the NBN, but whatever the mechanism, having old-timey broadcast towers in the middle of the bush doesn't make sense anymore. It's not a relevant argument. In any event, the Ultimo-centric ABC has not been doing a particularly good job at providing content to people in the bush anyway. I mean, there have been a litany of complaints about the fact that agricultural shows have been axed and regional radio stations really just syndicate content from the cities and so on. So that argument falls over as well. So, you know, hopefully that people take notice and we get some traction on privatising the ABC and getting rid of this $1.1 billion a year behemoth that we don't need.
Yeah, because after this week, surely people looking at this going... something's not right with the way the ABC is being run. Like, there seems to be something going wrong there. Like, the relationship between the ABC and the government.
I think they are, but I think people are misdiagnosing the problem. People are saying, oh, it's just because the evil liberals hate the ABC and they hate Emma Alberici and, you know, they don't like anybody calling them out on their so-called trickle-down economics. I mean, you know, the ABC is free to say whatever it likes, or it should be. I just don't want to pay for it. And there is absolutely no public policy reason for it for that to be the case going forward.
All right, brilliant. So the parliamentary research brief is 5 myths about state ownership of the ABC. You can go download it on ipa.org.au, give it a read. And yeah, Gideon, thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers. Great to be here.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we now welcome back to the show, former IPA. Well, you never really leave the IPA, as the Blue Mountains Greens have found out this week. So, Bo Sargent used to be work experience or just sort of interned with us for a little bit, but you're back in the IPA just for this interview, which was very cool.
That's right.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Thank you. Great to be back.
He's our high school correspondent.
High school correspondent. So, what is it like? So you.
He's 16.
Yep.
In year 10.
Yep.
Just a bit of context.
A few general facts. Page one of the doctor's thing. How have you adjusted to life off the pirate ship? So you're here for 1 or 2 weeks. You're off the pirate ship now. What's it like back in the real world? Yeah. It's a pirate ship.
What does that mean?
Yeah, well, it's to the office.
Going back, you don't get as much reason and sort of political opinions I agree with back in school. But, still fun. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Still enjoying school?
Happy to be back. Yep.
That's good.
Yeah.
Stay in school, work hard. That's my advice to the youth.
Stay in school for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about that, because you came to an event that the IPA was hosting with Greg Sheridan along the same time as the release of his new book. So what did you think of that? What did you think of some of the things that were being said? There was a lot of talk about religion, the new age, and its influence on Australian politics, or lack of influence, I guess.
Yeah, well, I thought it was really interesting to go to. I went with a couple of friends and we were talking about it afterwards, and we found it really interesting and a lot more informative than what we'd get at school or sort of from the more typical places that you get these kind of things about religion, like on the internet. So it was interesting to hear a religious perspective for once, because I really rarely hear someone that's actually religious and someone, because a lot of people at school, they're all atheists. Yeah.
But you go to religious school, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
And even in that environment, Christianity is kind of...
It's not really promoted. It's definitely present. There are definitely sort of a religious element. There are religious people, but the vast majority of people are atheists.
In terms of staff or...
I'm not too sure about the staff.
Yeah, I'm not sure how open they're going to be with that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like, guys, before we start maths, I just wanted to let you know I have accepted Jesus.
So not sure about the staff, but I know most of the student body would be atheist.
Yeah, fair enough. I want to talk about one particular part of this event, which was just at the front. So at the front of the event was just Morgan and I ushering people in. Ooh. And when you walked up with your friends, one of them was just amazed to be meeting Morgan Begg in the flesh. It was quite the sight.
He gets that all the
time. Is Morgan a celebrity?
Yeah, Morgan's a celebrity.
I was thinking, amongst certain people, all the IPA researchers are celebrities. Well, so like, yeah.
Yeah, it was very cool.
That's pretty... Well, how did Morgan take it? Was he just kind of...
Classic Morgan shrugged it off. Happens every day to him.
Yeah, but, yeah. Don't a photo.
Very understated. Yeah.
Check out my Insta.
Yeah. Morgan's Insta. Boy, oh boy. Cool. So let's also talk about... Sorry, you're back in school now. As you said, you're not as exposed to some of the ideas that get thrown around the IPA offices as much at school. You were telling us off air about a geography project you recently did. You want to tell us what happened there?
Yeah. So one of the big units for geography this semester has been on climate change. So causes, impacts, and potential responses. So the big sort of crowning assignment of this whole unit was an essay on responses to climate change. And the essay topic was, at which scale do you think that responses to climate change are most effective? So not how would you go about responding to climate change, if at all, providing an opinion on it. It was, do you believe that climate change must be responded to at a local, national, or global level? So no room for any contradictory opinion on climate change. And being someone that wants to pass their classes, I was somewhat forced to write an essay which I wholeheartedly disagree with. So
he's got the essay here, folks.
Yeah, I've got it here. So passages in here talking about the importance of the Paris Climate Agreement and why it's vital that all nations sign up to it. Climate change, the biggest issue of our modern times. The most effective scale response to climate change is a global one. So you
sold out your own ideals just to advance. Have you thought about running for politics, running for office? I think you'd be very high achiever.
So I'm guessing Bjorn Lomborg's research, or not his research, but the research he promotes about this affecting poor people wasn't mentioned. Talk us through your attempts to kind of broach whether or not you would be able to run an argument that wasn't.
Going through the unit, there wasn't. One of the classes was on perspectives on climate change.
Yeah, okay.
But there was no perspective about climate change not being an issue. It was all perspectives on how we deal with climate change.
Right.
So not
that many perspectives.
No, really. So not at
fear,
all.
Fear, intimidation.
Yeah.
Angst, those are the perspectives we're talking about.
Yeah,
right.
So based on the whole unit, I decided that it would probably be best if I wrote what they wanted to hear. I also spoke to some friends at school who had done this unit, and they strongly recommended against doing anything which would sort of challenge the climate change orthodoxy. So, yeah, I was backed into writing this essay, which I completely disagree with.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah. How many of your classmates do you reckon were kind of in the same boat as you, where they don't really think climate change is that much of an issue?
I'd say out of a class of 20-25, there'd be 5 or 10 people that sort of know that they don't agree with what's being taught.
Okay.
But a lot of the other people, not being too switched on in politics and that kind of thing, they just sort of take what's given to them. So I think if they got a perspective other than what is being taught through the curriculum, if they got the perspective of people that don't support this kind of climate change orthodoxy, then I think they would also come to disagree with climate change.
Fair enough.
There you go. So there's a groundswell of support there, isn't there?
Absolutely, yeah. So this is something you're also talking about that you're having trouble with in school debating, where you have to build cases. Now, when I was doing high school debating, we were sort of given like, oh, you're pro or against this case, and you just had to sort of wing it. Is that the same to... Well, that's basically what we did. But is that the same sort of thing that's going on now?
It's still going on. But so you get affirmative or negative. You may get the side of the topic you want or you may not. But now, irrespective of what the topic is, you have to take a left-wing side of the argument in order to win. So I've never seen a debate won based on conservative arguments in high school, even uni debating. So an example is this debate that I've brought with me. So that Australia should introduce a mandatory inheritance tax. Oh. And so we were, one of the times I did this debate, we were for this. And so like, that's unfortunate, but we'll sort of just deal with getting for an inheritance tax. So we got up, I our first speaker spoke, and then expecting the negative to come out with like the normal arguments against inheritance tax.
Okay.
But they said, no,
like,
no, no.
It's my money.
Yeah. They said, no, we don't believe in inheritance tax. We believe in raising other taxes. So we believe in putting like a 70% millionaire tax, that kind of thing, because I remember the line, it's more effective to tax people when they're alive than when they're dead. So
like, well, you get less resistance one way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Usually people are richer when they're dead than when they're... depending on how they go throughout the journey of their life. Anyway, that's a side issue. Yeah.
Let's not get into the weeds on that one.
So what would have happened had they just said, oh, you know, taxation's bad theft. And big government's bad. Yeah, taxation's theft.
Had they said that, they would have been...
in the Fed.
They would have been spoken to by the adjudicator at the end when they give their feedback and probably told that, oh, well, there were much better arguments you could have run and sort of how can you justify this kind of approach? Because all debates that I've seen have always been from a big government perspective. How can the government sort of get itself in the way of people to improve a certain group of people's lives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird because we were told, like, when I was doing debating, it's like, oh, never bring in another topic, just speak to the topic that's there. So to win on, like, bringing in, oh, not that tax, but this other tax, and just moving everything that way would usually get you a loss, but that's weird. You got another example here?
Oh, yeah, another one.
Very prepared, Bo.
So here's another one is that this house would ban the use of animals in sport. So we were against this. And we ran an argument that people are going to be hurt if you ban the use of animals in sport. So all the people out in the country that sort of need the income from animals in sport, well, they're going to suffer immeasurably. And in a debate with four teams, so British parliamentary, we were ranked second because the opposition managed to prove that the animals were a more important stakeholder than the people that are going to suffer. So they acknowledge that people are going to lose money and that they're going to probably have to turn to other means and that they're it's going to hurt them a lot.
Sorry, go on.
Oh, but they had the animals on their side, so they won.
So you think this is not like they debated better, this is purely ideological?
They did debate.
That's a hard
well.
Word.
Yeah, but definitely a lot of it came down to ideology.
Right. So we're going to have to update the food chain. Is that basically what is coming out of this debate? Like, we'll have to update the food chain because animals are now above humans.
Oh, No. So animals apparently are always the most important stakeholder.
What about the animals that are going to be killed because, like,
we raised that point. They'd be sent off to, like, Saudi Arabia and the Middle East. And if they can't be used here, they'll be sold off for food. They just didn't engage with that.
Yeah, so they're going to a farm upstate. Don't worry about it, guys. They're having a lot of fun up there.
But so once
we can't go visit them.
Well, once again, though, there's a lot of your colleagues at school who are kind of in the same boat as you. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. A lot more than people would think. And even people that you wouldn't ordinarily expect to be politically switched on and really into politics, a lot of them still find ways of being involved in conservatism. So include like over the internet, the intellectual dark web, all that kind of stuff. They managed to get into politics that way.
Yeah, we were talking about intellectual dark web last time you were on the show. Why do you think so many students are jumping out of it?
Well, the first big reason is that it's like the first time they've ever heard something challenging identity politics. So before the intellectual dark web, most people my age have had this identity left-wing politics thrown at them their whole lives by teachers, by just the general media that they hear around them, by people on Twitter, on Facebook. And so then they come up against this new idea, these new ideas on the intellectual dark web, and everyone thinks, wow, this is amazing, new ideas. This actually sort of resonates with me. I kind of agree with what's being said here. I'm going to read into this more. I'm going to learn more about the ideas that are being proposed on the intellectual dark web. Another reason is that it's accessible online. So you don't have to walk into a conference. That can be pretty intimidating. You don't have to join a political party. You can just go on under 10 seconds. You can Google Jordan Peterson videos.
Young IPA podcast.
Young IPA podcast. And you can have really good content and really interesting ideas right there in front of you. And also because it's just sort of common sense, a lot of it. So people, they understand that more and agree with it more than the sort of common left-wing ideology that we get from everywhere else.
What about this thing, you know, we hear about young people have short attention spans? Is the intellectual dark web, of course, doesn't subscribe to that at all and sort of proves that that's not the case. Would that be another thing? You know, young people want to sit down and really get deep into an idea.
Yeah. So young people are actually really interested in getting involved, or not so much getting involved, but learning about different ideas and seeing things which challenge their own opinions. And lots of people are perfectly willing to sit through a two-hour video if they find it interesting enough.
Yep.
And a lot of people do. A lot of my friends at school have gotten involved in politics. I would never have expected certain people to be interested in these kind of ideas.
Is this the one that liked Morgan?
Oh, no, this is a different one.
Okay,
I think if you like Morgan, you're very open to these ideas.
Yeah. No, so, you know, people that you might expect to be sort of more sport-oriented, not that academic, not interested in politics, suddenly they discover these things online and they're hooked on it. They're super interested in everything that is being said by Jordan Peterson. Lots of people. Someone came up to me the other day and asked me if I knew about Prager University.
Yeah, right.
Which, that was a complete shock to me, that these kind of people are actually really interested in learning more.
Evan Mulholland, who works here at the IPA, told me the other day he went to his high school reunion and all these people who he thought had no interest at all in this kind of stuff came up to him and went, "Oh, Evan, I love Jordan Peterson, man, you know." That's the voice of Evan's schoolmates, in case anyone was wondering. Anyway, so to echo Bo's point, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So you would think that, like, you'd say that more students are coming up to you talking about this now that Jordan Peterson's an international superstar than previously, right?
Yeah, and also because it's only growing. Every day there are more subscribers, more people watching the videos of all of the intellectual dark web people, all the figures on there. Every day I feel like it's sort of the coming to the end of identity politics, because the youth of today are no longer just sort of taking in the sort of mantra of identity politics from institutions. Mm. We're sort of coming out on our own and searching for our own ideas to be reinforced, to come across just new opinions. And so I find that to be a really positive thing.
All right, cool. Bo, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, thank you to Gideon and Bo for those interviews. Really interesting chats. Make sure you're listening. Make sure you're reading Gideon Rosner's PRB on the ABC at the IPA website, ipa.org.au. Speaking of the ABC, Pete, we had one ABC presenter make a very brave stand.
Well, you know, there's not only one ABC story this week, there's two. Tom Ballard, former host of Tonightly, or host of Tonightly, has come out to the surprise of millions and endorsed the Vic Socialists for Victorian election in November. Happy to be endorsing at Stephen Jolly 99 and the Vic Socialists for Victorian election in November. They are cool. Okay. Check out their platform here. He then goes on to write a whole thing, you know, what are those things called? Memes, that's right. Pictures with... No, that's not a meme.
It's not really a meme. It's more of an infographic, yeah.
Infographic, right. And he says a number of things. One of those things is, a vote for the Victorian Socialists is a vote for better housing, better public transport.
Wait. Can I go verbal meme? Because we're doing a distracted boyfriend thing right later in the show, but it should be like the girl on the right, Australian Greens, and the guy in the middle, Tom Ballard, and then he's looking at the Australian Socialists.
That's right.
Sorry, verbal meme for you guys.
That sums up this situation.
That should have been the meme he did.
That's exactly right. Because what he did write was, as a vote for the Victorian Socialists is a vote for better housing, better public transport, and stronger workers' rights, which it really isn't. But of course, we don't care if people at the ABC support socialists, do we, James?
Not really.
We would be very curious to know how many of them support conservatives or even liberals.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's the main thing. Again, bringing back to the second the government gets involved in a broadcast, all these issues arise. Like, if it was on like Channel 9 or any privately owned organization, like, hey, I support the socialists, it's like, okay, I still don't care, but like, you know, you can do whatever you want. But the second it's like he's on a government payroll, there's so many groups that are like, oh, you know, you can't have that, et cetera. So just get rid of the government payroll.
Well, I can't believe he doesn't understand how the economy works, so that's surprising. But also, are the Greens like losing people at the moment? He would be in their wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was going to talk about that later in the show, but Well, my thing with this is like maybe this is the final thing that can sway inner city white hipsters towards socialism. Yeah. Like maybe Tom Ballard's the final thing that can get them over the line.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, well, speaking of the Greens, so I don't want to set something off with this podcast, like cause a stir here, but apparently we control the Greens. News
to me. Actually, that was my understanding.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, my understanding.
Well, we work in different parts of the office. Yeah, so you're in meetings and I'm not. Yeah. Anyway, so the story is Blue Mountains Greens, that sort of electorate. Nicole Hoskin stood for the Greens in Ward 1, like latest council election. But now there's revelations that she worked for the IPA about 10 years ago. So that's the story. Like she was here for 8 months. Well, it's well before my time. So 8 months between 2008 and 2009. Like none of us are here for that. Mm-hmm. So she says, like, I worked with one of their fellows and wrote about animal welfare, animal rights campaigns, and the scientific research. And then that's set off this like online storm between her and some of the other Greens in the Blue Mountains. Mm. She accused, this is my favorite part of the article. So she accused one of her Facebook critics of blatantly mischaracterizing what she wrote on a blog post by an IPA fellow and straying into defamation while accused another of mansplaining the issue. Always the card you choose. If you're ever on the back foot, just accuse the other of mansplaining.
Yeah.
That's the Trump card. Not that Trump card. Anyway, so we control the Greens.
Yeah, that's great. Look, we don't like to stray into, you know, inner party spats in the Blue Mountains Greens. The thing that strikes you about them is how open-minded the Greens are.
Yes.
And how tolerant they are of diversity.
Yeah.
And how the fact that someone had an 8-month position 10 years ago means they're no longer suitable to represent the party.
Not at all.
And what was the other thing? I mean, I thought more Greens would be IPA supporters anyway, because clearly the best way to look after the environment is the free market.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, the Greens have done some stuff on data surveillance and, you know, the IPA's done a whole lot of stuff on data surveillance. So, you know, we're not that far apart on that particular issue.
And, you know, you should be able to buy mongooses, endangered mongooses. You should be able to own them, Nina.
I don't think the Greens would be on that one.
Yeah, I know. But that's, anyway.
You should be able to.
But we'll work with them on that if they want to.
Cool. Right. The other part of that, so I like the idea that someone works here for 6 months and then we're like, look, here's what you're going to do.
Yeah, 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 in 10 years.
Look, in 10 years' time, Blue Mountains Greens.
Yeah.
That's the way you're going. And suddenly our sleeper cell operation's been cooked.
Well, when are we going to take over Tom Ballard's socialists? Because clearly the Greens are...
Yeah, well, see, this is my thought. So if you're the Australian socialist, are you happier with the fact that the IPA controls the Greens or that Tom Ballard endorses socialism? Like, what's the bigger thing for you this week? Because it's been a great week for the Australian socialists.
Yeah.
Their biggest competitor, IPA stooges.
Yeah.
And then Tom Ballard, the friend of them, like the friend of the inner city lefty, is like, look, socialism.
Well, let's...
It's been a big week for
the socialists. We need to get them too.
Yeah. Nina, how do you feel about being a sleeper cell?
I don't know.
Maybe she... I just assumed Nina was a sleeper cell.
Of the Australian socialists, the reverse sleeper cell.
Who knows?
So we'll move on to another one. So I've got... All right, so we talked earlier in the show about Trump's speech at the UN.
Yeah.
Okay. This... We could have talked about this earlier in the show, but it is very funny. We wanted to give it its own little segment here. So BBC News tweeted out, Donald Trump tells UN General Assembly, war will follow, quote, after his decision to reimpose sanctions on Iran, who he accuses of, quote, slaughter in Syria and Yemen.
Yeah.
Then they issued a slight clarification later.
Just a minor update.
Clarification, real Donald Trump's actual words appear to be more will follow, not war will follow. Hashtag honest mistake.
Hashtag honest mistake.
Hashtag I nearly set off an international incident.
Sorry, boss.
Yeah.
It was an honest mistake.
Like, how much do you have to hate Trump that you hear war will follow and you don't go, I might need to play back the tape a little. You're like, oh, that's something Trump would say. Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Yeah. At least people get a transcript.
Yeah.
Like, journos get a transcript.
Well, yeah, but like, it's the clickbait journalism. Like, oh, he said war. I need to be the first person to tweet this. We need the clicks. So don't bother checking anything. He definitely said war.
But the thing you have to remember about publicly funded broadcasting, James, is that it's independent.
Oh, of course, yes.
And it doesn't take up size.
Well, it's an honest mistake, Pete.
Yeah.
It's an honest mistake. There's nothing trickery about it.
And look. Hashtag, I love the way they kept the tweet up for ages and just put the correction down the bottom in the replies.
Yeah, where no one could say that'll be fine.
Yeah. And now it's actually gone, I think. Anyway, but...
you have to take that down.
Yeah. They left it up. They waited for 400 million people to click on it before they took it down. But good on them eventually getting there. The thing is, Trump is such a troll and I can't believe he accuses the mainstream press of fake news because that's clearly not true.
Yeah, that's true. Let's move on to someone saving animals but without a permit.
Well, James...
Nina hasn't heard this story, so let's get Nina's live reaction afterwards.
Nina will love confused. This. She won't love it. She'll hate it. Tammy Hedges from North Carolina was arrested for providing care for 17 cats and 10 dogs whose owners evacuated because of Hurricane Florence because it was raining cats and dogs.
Hey, or it would have been if not for Tammy Hedges.
Yeah. I'm ready for fatherhood. The owner of Crazy's, so she owns this donation-based rescue shelter for animals called Claws and Paws, good name, which is building a warehouse to house pets, but it wasn't quite finished. Anyway, all those people evacuated, so she looked after their pets, and then she got arrested because she had started to administer them with animal medication, right? So I don't know what that is, but, you know, like for conditions they were having, blah, blah, blah. And currently she's not a registered vet, so she got arrested.
Yeah, arrested for doing, amazing work just without a permit.
Under duress.
Under duress.
How good's the land of the free?
Yeah, exactly.
What else? Did she do something else? Anyway, sorry, there's 12 charges.
I also like
12
she was
charges for that.
12, yeah. Well, because she missed 12 different animals, sorry. Yeah. Like on 12 different animals she gave, like, she just gave them the drugs they need, or maybe like would have given them stress stuff to like calm them down a little. I also she gets a call from the Wayne County Animal Control. They tell her, you can voluntarily hand over the animals or I can go get a warrant. Mm. She does voluntarily hand over the animals and she's still arrested. So the guy's like, I have an out here, but no, justice must prevail.
It's like, she's not stealing them, mate.
She gave them back. She's just, I like the owners as well. Like, just like, how dare she care for my animal?
Do the owners crack it as well?
Oh, no, I just like the idea that the owners are out there going like, how dare she do this? Dare she keep my animal alive?
Yeah. After they thought it was going to die.
Yeah.
Because they had to leave. Anyway, hopefully that'll get resolved. Normally they do after.
Podcast.
IPA podcast in Melbourne.
Once we get our fists shaking, people start quaking.
That's right.
Thank you.
Just to get out there.
Yeah, it did. Cool. So, move on to another one. So, Norm Macdonald has a show, new show on Netflix. I'm a huge Norm Macdonald fan.
James absolutely loves Norm Macdonald.
Don't I ever. I still haven't watched the show because the last week has not been one of mirth for me after a certain football match on Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to get into it, or the one on Saturday.
It's cricket season.
Cricket season, basketball season for me. And the Rockies just took a 5-0 lead in baseball. So I've got a lot of other portfolios that I'm following.
A few irons
in the fire. So let's talk about this one. So Norm Macdonald has a show. It's this new talk show. It's basically his YouTube show, but on Netflix now. And one of the things he wants to do is like, I don't want to do topical humor. I don't want to do topical topics. Yeah. It's just going to be just like the anti-talk show. The New Yorker says that this cannot be. So the New Yorker tweeted out one of their articles. The comedian Norm Macdonald doesn't really do political comedy, which is itself a political stance that may require, at present, a defense more robust than he cares to muster.
Yeah, I reckon he's a racist.
Because, he did get into a huge storm on the promo tour. Because he defended Louis C.K. and Roseanne Barr, and he said some other questionable stuff on Howard Stern. But the idea that you can't get not doing politics is political is very funny to me.
Well, it's the Taylor Swift syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to take a side.
Yeah, she's
not even saying go out and vote. That's still not taking a side.
Yeah, so Taylor Swift, Norm Macdonald, same basket.
So what the New Yorker's done here for Pete and I has really processed a conundrum. Is there some sentence that you can form that the New Yorker would not think is political?
Yeah.
If saying I don't care about politics is political, what is not political? Mm. If I may.
You go ahead, mate.
The one I've prepared.
You thought long and hard.
Mozzarella cheese is okay.
I did a food one too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's because it's 12 o'clock. We're both hungry.
That's cultural appropriation.
Oh, really? Damn it.
And it's not.
Oh, yeah, because, it's...
Because you're not Italian, but also...
Well, I am culturally appropriating. I'm not Italian.
But you're not saying it's good. You're saying it's bad, so you're a racist.
No, I said it's okay.
Yeah.
The most watered down...
Damn it with faint praise.
So
you're doing both.
All right.
So I said I like Singapore noodles.
Oh, you cultural appropriator. Both of us are very bad on the cultural appropriation
side. You're not Singaporean, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Both of us are really hungry, aren't we?
I didn't say love. Nana, what's your,
can you think of a statement that we can't?
I don't care about sports.
Yeah, that's racist.
Where?
Because other people care about sport.
Yeah.
No, that's...
You're marginalising athletes, basically,
you're
doing.
Yeah.
You're taking a whole group of people and saying, I don't care about your profession. Very political stance.
Anyway, we've proven that it's not political. Possible. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, I didn't think mozzarella cheese was political, but apparently I'm a cultural appropriator.
That's what the New Yorker thinks.
Yeah. If the New Yorker ever got a hold of you, Nina, boy, you'd be leading the front pages. Let us talk about, For our Swedish listeners, we do have a story for you.
This is one we specially prepared for you. No, that's not true. This is a world event that's coming.
Didn't plant this story. It's not like the Blue Mountains of Greens. We didn't control the Swedish advertising watchdog.
Now, in Sweden, there's an advertising watchdog called RO. I don't know what RO stands for. It's the Swedish advertising watchdog. And a company in Sweden, the internet service provider Barnhof, used the image. What's the image called again?
The distracted boyfriend meme.
Distracted boyfriend meme.
I mean, everyone knows what it is. Yeah, so...
Yeah, I mean, pretty, like, it's, you know what I'm talking about. It's the guy with his girlfriend and then he's sort of perving on the girl that's walking the other way.
Yeah.
And, but, like, there's it's gone viral. You know, you can do...
You can do so many things to it. Like, anytime someone was obsessed with one topic or moves on to something else, you just do it.
Footy players moving footy clubs, that sort of thing. It's a cracking... It's massive. It's a massive meme. Anyway, the Swedish internet service provider Barnhof used this image to talk about, you know, here's the, like... So the girl on the right is your current job. The guy is you, and the other woman is Barnhof.
Yeah. Right?
So I mean, that's not the greatest, you know, piece of advertising I've ever seen. But anyway, that's what they did. And Swedish advertising watchdog RO has ruled the use of this meme was gender discriminatory, both due to presenting women as interchangeable and sex objects, and presenting a stereotypical picture of men seeing women as interchangeable. It gives the impression that men might change female partners in the same way they change jobs.
I like the idea that Barnhof is a sexual object now. Like by that logic, like Barnhof the company is very sexual.
Yeah.
I also like the idea, like, so the idea is, you know, because like he's distracted by this new girl, like they're both sex objects. How do we know that they weren't having a really nice conversation and he just turned around and go, that was a really nice conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do we know the girl on his right's even his girlfriend?
I think our Swedish advertising watchdog RO heard a dog whistle. And if you hear the dog whistle, then you are the dog. Would be my woof, point. Woof, woof.
I thought you were going to do the...
I should have. That would have been very funny.
I don't think anyone's watched that and thought, you know what? I don't respect women anymore now that I've seen that meme.
Exactly. I certainly don't respect Swedish advertising watchdog RO.
Yeah.
Like, how do you go, like, this is a thing that brings people over to our side?
Yeah.
Anyway. Cool. So, last story we got here. Paul McCartney, lead singer of the Beatles, has joined the resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. New York Post tweeted out, Paul McCartney reveals his new song about climate change is directed at Donald Trump. That's over for this administration.
I'm so disappointed.
That's it. Trump has to resign.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney's got a song about climate change. It's all over. The groundswell of support they will have.
That is something. Obviously, I'm a massive Beatles fan and, you know, that's annoying. But I don't think you can...
I'm sorry, Pete, but a lot of your musician heroes are left-wing.
there's a lot of people I love that have stupid political views, so I think I'll get over
it. I would say 99% of my heroes I would disagree with completely.
Yeah, and even, like, friends and stuff. But, that's it. That's all I've got to say about that.
Cool. All right. And then that would bring us to the end of the show. So thank you to Gideon and Bo for those interviews. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening and subscribing. We're available on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, whatever you want. Pocket Cast on Android. It's all good. Make sure you're telling your friends and family about the show. Make sure you're getting them involved. Make sure they're listening. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you're leaving us that 5-star review. It really helps us out with the rankings. So Nina, closing the show. If people like the show, how can they become involved with the IPA?
I'll just be a member. Visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on the join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
All right. See you guys next week. We're going to enjoy our long weekends.
See ya.